Let my honesty spill out through the pages.
You're listening to Escaping the Rat Race. I'm your host, Amy Leo, a singer, songwriter, and mental health educator. And our show is all about questioning the status quo and pushing the boundaries into what's possible for human beings and not probable. So tune in and get ready to escape the rat race, not only the monotonous 9-to-5 work grind, but also that incessant internal mental chatter that prevents most of us humans from experiencing more joy, peace, clarity, and freedom.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Amy Leo. I'm here with my colleague Meg, and we are honored today to have special guest, stress and time coach, Julie Gray. And one of the reasons why I asked Julie onto the call is because I hear so much from people, concerns bubbling up, stress bubbling up about them not having the time to do more of what they love or to create products if they're an entrepreneur. So one of the major questions that both Julie gets asked and I get asked is, how do I get myself to do the things I know I need to do? So Julie, I am going to let you take it away from here. If you want to maybe jump right into that or give a little bit of a background, it's free flow. It's all you. So take it away, Julie.
Thanks, Amy. Well, let me just give you a little bit of context as to who I am so people can decide whether or not they want to pay attention to my response to that question. I started as a professional organizer, actually, about 10 years ago around the DC, Washington, DC area. And I quickly realized that I wanted to help people get organized, not just with their physical stuff. I could see how helpful it was, but I could also see that there was stuff happening on the inside that I really wanted to help facilitate. So very quickly, I went and I got trained as a coach. And so for quite a while now, I've been focused on helping people really get clear with the time management system that's actually going to work for them. And related to that is how they are managing their stress and anxiety, right? So the two fit, they kind of go hand in hand. And that's really been my focus with individuals and organizations for about 7 years. So what Amy's bringing up today, which is one of my favorite areas to play, frankly, because it's the intersection of all of these dynamics, is how we actually get ourselves to do the things that we know we need to do, right? So time management, which is quite fascinating, is that when we have this sense of, I need to be more in control of my time, I need to be more organized, we rush out and we read a book, we read blogs, we listen to TED Talks, we listen to podcasts, and we find strategies. We find things that resonate with us. And we say, oh, right, that's what I need to do. There it is. That's what I need to do. Okay, I'm going to go do that. And what very often happens is we start pushing a boulder up a hill. Because when we start with behavior, when we start with, and it's so common because that's what we see, right? That's what we see out into the world, is we see ourselves in the world doing something that we don't want to be doing or not doing something that we want to be doing. So it's so obvious. It makes so much sense that we should start with behavior. And yet when we start with behavior, we need to rely heavily upon discipline, willpower, managing ourselves, managing our thinking, monitoring. And this is why it often feels like we're pushing a boulder up a hill. We are holding our breath, sometimes literally, trying to get ourselves to do the things that we need to do. And it takes a lot of gripping. It takes a lot of conscious attention on ourselves and in order to make these things happen. And frankly, it's exhausting. So what often happens, what I've seen with my clients for years and in my own life, right, is that we can we can navigate these strategies, we can implement these strategies for a certain time. And some things stick, frankly, like some things over time kind of stick. But by and large, most of it doesn't, right? Because there's a threshold on how long we can rely on discipline and how long we can rely on our willpower. So I've come to find that this sort of forcing ourselves into new strategies, into a quote unquote better time system or a better stress management system isn't actually the most effective way. It really just makes us more tired. It definitely generates more thinking. And ultimately, it isn't the source of behavior change. So this is kind of different. We think that in order to change behaviors, we need to shift our behaviors. And that sounds so obvious, except that our behaviors can never be the source of our behaviors. So let me give you an analogy. It looks like, let's say I want to be a queen, right? Or let's say Amy wants to be a queen. So Amy says, okay, in order for me to be a queen, I need to find myself a crown or a tiara, and I need to learn how to practice my wave, and I need to go buy some really beautiful fancy dresses, right? So this is an example of trying to be a queen from the outside in. We can't actually change who we are from the outside. We can't change our behaviors from the outside. That's not the source of them. So I want to pause here because I just talked a lot here from Amy or Megan. What's coming up for you? What are you following me here? Like, what are you curious about?
Yeah, well, I just love the visualization of me as a queen, Julie. So thank you.
That would be so much fun instead of me. Let's throw you in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I can resonate to this, what you're saying, because, you know, if I look around me as well, information does not cause transformation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. I find myself curious about what the alternative is, Julie, but before I ask that, I'm curious, Meg, do you have a question about what Julie's talking about this pushing a boulder up a hill, about the forcing ourselves and kind of beating ourselves up if we don't do certain things by a certain time?
I don't know. I'm super curious too, to like hear what happens next. Like what's, you know? I don't know if it's exactly a question, but it made me think of like, there's always like a meme online that you see. And as a health coach, I feel like I've even posted it myself. It's somebody pushing a boulder up a hill. You know, this is life basically. And you just keep pushing. And if it goes back a little bit, you don't give up. You keep pushing forward. And that's what it made me picture. But I guess like I've been told a lot by mentors, the if then concept, if I lost the weight, then I could be happy or something like that. Like you just act like the person that you want to be. Right? Which is kind of like what you just explained, but you're obviously hinting at some underlying thing, like you have to change it from your thoughts and your inside before you can be on the outside. But from what I've been taught often is that, you know, if you want to lose weight, then act like somebody who's already lost the weight and start to incorporate healthy eating, start to incorporate movement into your life. So I don't know if that coincides with what you're saying or if it's the opposite, you know? So I guess that, I don't know if that's a question. Huh.
No, it's perfect. Cause this is what's happening in the minds of your audiences for probably right. Or of your audience. So this is really different than what we're told. Right. So I just want to call that out and thanks for that comment, Megan, cause it is very common. So here's my belief, this is my understanding. My understanding is that for way too long, we've been taught this fundamental formula for creating change, for being more productive. And that is, you know, faster equals more equals better, right? We have to push in order to get to where we want to be. We have to force, we have to self-manage, self-monitor. And the faster we do it, the better. The more quickly we'll get to where we want to be. But the fundamental flaw in this this formula, for in my opinion, is that, not to mention the fact that there is a boatload of research now that points to, that disproves this formula, right? That faster almost never equals more, and more definitely doesn't always equal better. But the flaw here is that we actually, it's a moving target, right? So if we think that something on the outside of us has the ability to make us feel a certain way, we're never going to get to feel that way. So to use Megan's great example of losing weight, if we think that losing weight, that having less fat on our bodies is going to bring us peace of mind or acceptance of our bodies or whatever it is, that thing that we're looking for, happiness, then we are attributing our feelings of dissatisfaction, our feelings, our lack of a peace of mind on this external thing, on this, you know, extra weight that we're carrying. But the source of our feelings, the source of our feelings can never be anything external. Now, this is a very radical concept, and this is absolutely pointing us in the direction of this alternative approach to creating change. So I don't want you to think we're regressing here. We're moving the conversation forward. When we realize, and this takes, I think this takes some time. Some people can see this right away, but generally this takes some time. When we start to see that behind the scenes of life, right, behind the scenes, like the invisible nature of life, is that where our feelings are coming from, where our thinking is coming from, where our behaviors are coming from, is only ever coming from inside of us, inside of us. They're never coming from outside of us. So the standard kind of classic example of this is that some days you walk into your office and you're completely overwhelmed by all that you have to do. And the next day you walk into your office and your to-do list hasn't changed, but you're not that worried about it. You just sit down and you start knocking it out, that the overwhelm isn't there. Well, the only constant in that situation was your state of mind, was your thinking. The only thing that was different was your thinking about the situation. The situation is never causing the overwhelm. This is a very fine distinction. This is a very tricky, it's so simple, it's easy to miss. The state of mind, our thinking, moment to moment to moment, is actually creating what we see. It's creating how we're experiencing reality. To go back to Megan's weight loss example, it looks like the weight is what's creating our dissatisfaction. The thinking, that state of mind of dissatisfaction, is what's coming first. We're just attributing it in this moment to our weight, to the need to lose weight. But once we do that, if we're still convinced that our external reality has to be, like, the circumstances have to be perfect or to our up to our satisfaction for us to be okay, it will literally continue to be a moving target, right? Let's say we lose a bunch of weight. Well, then we're going to be anxious about our business, or then we're going to be anxious about our finances, or there's going to be another goal that needs to be reached in order for us to be okay. And this is the fallacy, just to bring it back, this is the fallacy in that formula that says that we need to move faster in order to get where we're going, in order to be at peace. And it can't ever be true. So I know I sound very convincing that, I hope I sound convincing, even though I'm running up against everything else outside of, out in the world is saying the opposite. And I get that. So I'm going to pause again here because that was a lot more talking, and just hear where you ladies are at.
Well, I paused and waited for Amy, but she didn't go, so I'm going to go. Because I've been around this way of thinking for over a year now, honestly, for much longer than that, and it just, like you said, it was easily missed, right? It's definitely been around much longer than that in my life, and I just always, like, overcomplicated and overthought it. But what I was saying earlier about what most people say about living and being external is what I've always been taught. And this past year is everything you've been saying, exactly what I've been learning and trying to teach my own clients is, you know, that whatever's happening on the outside that you want to change has to first be changed on the inside, like your thoughts about it and everything like that, and how your beliefs about it. Now, I don't know if that's what you're getting at. That's what I've come to believe myself. And so I love, my favorite thing that you just said, honestly, is the example about the office and how the only constant and the only thing that didn't change was our thinking about it and how that is everything in our life. Like, it's not just about work in the office. It's about like feeling overwhelmed and stressed out, getting the kids to school on time or meal prepping or weight loss or having the in-laws come or anything. It's always in regards, like, what's the constant? Why is it stressful this time and not last time? Or why is it stressful? Why was it stressful last time and not this time? It's always, you know, that one thing that's staying consistent.
Yeah.
Great. Can I hop in there, Meg?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I'm really hearing from Julie is something that I've seen is really true for myself. And that is, no matter what goes on in life, I take the humanness with me. So whether I have $1 million or not, I'm going to have low states of mind and feel depressed and anxious in certain moments or stressed out, just like I have the ability to experience love and connection and fulfillment and gratitude. So that, I think, is what I'm hearing when Julie's talking about a moving target, you know. And I think it's funny, I'd love to hear what you think about this, or what do you have to say about this, Julie, about this idea of change itself, because just the fact that people are looking for change to me kind of alerts me that they may be just taking on another flavor of the same fallacy that you were talking about, Julie.
Yeah, absolutely. This is exactly what happens. And I love you bring in the humanness of this, right? So what we're pointing to, this like quote unquote new paradigm or new formula that I'll kind of walk you through, or that we are walking through, is it's not about eliminating dissatisfaction or stress and anxiety, but it fundamentally shifts how we relate to it. Fundamentally shifts how we relate to it. So we might have low states of mind or low moods or, you know, frustration, of course, right? We're human. And how we relate to it is entirely different. So, and that, in my experience, changes everything. And to Megan's point about, you know, changing our thinking and behavior, this is kind of where I wanted to look next. So when I start introducing people to this idea that behavioral-based strategies are beautifully helpful, but they don't necessarily need to be where we start, right? Like, sometimes, you know, you want to be attuned to them, but more often than not, we're being way overly reliant upon their efficacy. So when people hear this, they say, oh, I get it. I need to change my thinking, right? Then I will have better behaviors, because they realize on some level, and I think the world has woken up in a big way around this, right? That we can't always force change from the outside, that we need to do sort of internal work to get ourselves to change. And this is really helpful and common, and also very subtly missing the point. And I'm going to try to make that distinction right here. So what happens often is they say, oh, right. Okay. Thanks, Jules. I'm going to go and I'm going to be positive. I'm going to work really hard. And also I'm going to work really hard to meditate, and I'm going to uncover all my limiting beliefs. And I'm going to figure out exactly, you know, what's holding me up, right? What emotional blockages or, you know, thinking is in the way. And I'm going to come up with a new way of thinking, and then I will have a new way of behaving. So this is kind of subtle, but I want you to see that this is using that same outdated model of forcing change. What we've done very sneakily, and I've done this a million times, is that we've said, oh, it's not my behavior that needs to change for me to be okay. It's my thinking that needs to change for me to be okay? Oh, I will just focus really hard on my thinking then. Right? So it's really sneaky, because what this understanding is pointing to, and we haven't really, we've touched a little bit on this, isn't that we need to change our thinking. It's that we think. So here's what I mean by that. When Megan was talking about what happens when you walk into your office, and some days you're stressed out by it, and some days you're not stressed out by your to-do list, or sometimes when your in-laws come, you're completely freaking out, and sometimes it doesn't matter, right? The constant here is thought. So the implication of that is that we are, one, only ever experiencing our thinking in the moment. Our thinking in the moment, period, full stop, is the only thing we're ever experiencing. And two, to Amy's beautiful point, it's always shifting, constantly ebbing and flowing, like the clouds in the sky. And three, we don't have to take it that seriously. When we start to see through thought, through it, we start to see that it makes no sense to worry about changing it, because it's going to shift on its own. It's going to, just evolve. Especially when the more and more and more we see that we don't have to believe it. We don't have to buy into our thinking. All right, I'm going to pause there before we get to this sort of last piece of it. I just want to hear where you guys are at.
Yeah, for me, Julie, I think that, you know, we're always in a trap when we're trying to explain something that kind of has no form. We're talking about energy that we can't see, we can't touch, but yet we have to put it into words. We have to put it into form to have these conversations with each other. So for me, the one thing that was helpful in seeing that you aren't talking about thinking, and you've kind of said this, you aren't talking about thinking like conscious personal thinking. Thinking like, you know, you're looking at a cartoon and you see the bubbles above the head. I hear you speaking about something that's way more universal and way more broad and way more neutral. So thinking, as I'm hearing you say it, is really just the fact that energy is moving through each of our own biochemistries at any moment. Is that kind of, am I kind of on there with what I'm hearing, Julie?
So where I was pointing to people is their personal thinking, right? Because this is what we get wrapped up in is, oh, I had a negative thought, right? Like I have this one client who has ADHD, and I work with a lot of people with ADHD, and she's got this highly attuned self-monitoring system. And this is going to get back to your distinction, Amy. So what she does is, like, she has a thought and she wants to lose weight. And so she'll have a thought about how fat she is, right? Or whatever the thought is. And she'll grab onto that thought and she'll go, oh, no. I'm not going to think negatively about my body, right? Which is a beautiful thing to catch. I'm not going to think negatively about my body. I'm going to think about the fact that I've made so much progress in order to help my body. So I'm going to, whenever I think about that, I'm going to think about how much progress I've made. And then she finds herself in these situations where she's repeatedly thinking negative thoughts about her body and then spending a lot of time and energy shifting that thought to something else, right? And this is what we do all day long. And this is what we've been taught to do. And this isn't to say it's not helpful, but I want to just point to some logic here. If she saw that thought was a neutral energy, she would not in any way feel the need to worry about changing it, because it's just floating on. It's just moving. It's moving through. And the bigger point here is that we or her, let's continue using her as an example, have the ability to witness our thinking. We are conscious of thought. We are actually stepped back, watching it float through our brains. We're going, oh, that one, not so good. Oh, that one, that's a great one. Oh, there are so many, I'm not even aware consciously of all the thinking. And yet we have this ability, we have this consciousness to witness thought. A wonderful analogy is that thought all day long is playing out on a movie screen in front of us. We forget all day long that we are not in the movie. We are in the audience watching the movie. And as audience members of our own personal beautiful movie, we get to decide. This is where we get to decide what thought we actually want to pay attention to. This is where we decide, oh, that's a bad thought. Oh, this is a good thought, right? So this is our universal power to see where thought, feeling, behavior is coming from. This consciousness is determining, this state of mind is determining in every moment what we're thinking, what we're focused on, how we're responding. I want to just loop back in and make sure that I'm actually answering your question and point, Amy, or if you have other questions.
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful how you just articulated that, Julie. And as you're telling the story about the weight loss, I really giggled because that's kind of a pattern of thinking that I held on to for a long time, that kind of ping-ponging back and forth. And what I've seen now that's really ironic and kind of funny is that I'd have a thought, and then I was always trying to look back and attend to it, but it happened in the past. So by me keeping on to that thought and attending to it and thinking I need to do something, it actually prolonged the experience of dissatisfaction or low self-esteem or whatever, however it manifested. And I just think it's really ironic. And I think this ties into what you're saying about, you know, kind of a new paradigm versus what we've been acculturated to believe and think.
When was the last time you laughed out loud, connected with an old friend, or did something you love to do, even at work? Do you find yourself just getting through each day instead of enjoying each day? Many people will tell you that a life of joy and passion as a working person is unrealistic. Our Escaping the Rat Race team is living proof that this is not true. So here's our question for you. Are you clear on how to achieve more freedom, fulfillment, and joy from the inside out? Do you want to learn? To celebrate the new year, we are offering 30-minute first step to freedom diagnostic calls, where together we identify the first action step for overcoming your most pressing problem so you can start living free of the rat race that very day. To take your first step, send an email to ratrace@amyleo.com. Again, that email address is ratrace@amyleo.com. RATRACE@AMYLEO.com. Space is limited to the first 25 people who say, yes, I want to take the first step toward more freedom.
I'm curious what Meg is hearing right now.
It was very eye-opening to hear what you had to say, especially because I do work with women in weight loss, and I do have them do focus on their thinking, not to the extent of what you're saying, almost like earlier you were saying, like, behavior's, you know, perfectly fine, but maybe that's not where you want to start. So just to clarify, what you're saying is that it's like a movie, right? And we're the audience. And so it's important not to pay attention to that negative thought and instead just realize that it will pass just like any other thought. And by focusing on it and giving it attention is where our worries and consistently like fears come from. Like if we gave it enough attention that we're like, oh, this is a negative thought and now I need to change it into a positive thought, that's a choice of paying attention to that thought in general instead of just realizing that it can pass by and not have anything to do with your reality. Is that?
Yeah. And the only refinement I would make to that really great summary is that it's actually not a negative thought.
Oh, right. You said it was neutral. See?
Well, and this is so like such an important distinction, because we're the one assigning whether or not it's negative or positive. And then we're the one deciding how we need to deal with it. Right. So it's like this chasing our tail where we think, where we determine the meaning of something, and then we determine what we need to do, right? So my client, what we talked about was, I said, you're spending a lot of time changing a thought that you assigned in the first place. So this is a very subtle distinction, is that it never means anything other than what we give it. We give it. And when we really see that, then we just naturally, organically, without effort, stop worrying about our thinking. It's not even like we're like, oh, I'm going to let that one go, right? We just don't care. It's just this thing that happens where we just start taking it less seriously. And I want to check in with you, Megan, to see if that was a helpful clarification.
No, it was. It definitely was. And it's funny, when I say negative thought with my clients or in writing even, I always put quotations around it, as in like, like it's a negative thought, because that's what we're told, it's a negative thought. But just to get the point across, because obviously it's like exactly what you said, you are the one that's making it, you're the one that's classifying it as negative or positive, you know, good or bad, right or wrong. And it's all something that you have decided on in your head, whether it's because somebody once told you that it's right or wrong, or because in your experiences, it's just what you feel is right or wrong.
Yeah. Or like the given state of mind that you're in, right? Like this is like, oh, like some days we're really worried about some thinking and other days we don't care. Right. So it's literally being created moment to moment. And we forget. And this is, I think, again, to Amy's beautiful point, we're human. And I believe this is what we're here to do. We're here to forget. We forget that we are the creators of the experience. Right. And we're when we see this for ourselves, that we are in the audience, we're in the movie audience, or we're like, the other analogy I use is like a tennis match, right? So your thinking is going back and forth on the court, and it looks like we're in that match. Like a lot of times we get into the game and forget that we're actually a spectator. But the second that we remember that we're a spectator, right, the second, and it's built into the system to do this, the second we remember that we have the option to look in this direction, not in the direction of behavior, not in the direction of thinking, but in the direction of who we are before any of it, that intangible, formless, spiritual energy, we're back in the present moment. And instead of looking at life very narrowly, right? Like these are my only options that I can see. We're looking at reality in a very restricted way inside of our thinking. We drop back into the present moment where an infinite amount of possibilities exist and how to move forward. And this is how I help my clients get themselves to do what they need to do, right? So instead of focusing so hard on the predetermined behavior that we think will get us to act in the way we want, or focusing so hard on getting ourselves to think in the way that will get us to act in the way that we want, we look at our innate well-being. We look at our pure consciousness. We look in this direction of formless intelligence and energy that's available to us, that's running the show, frankly, that's running the show, that's growing the trees and opening the flowers in the spring, right? And beating our hearts. This is what we're a part of. This is what we have access to all day long, every moment. And when we're busy in our minds, it limits our access to this. And when we're in a quieter mind, thanks to seeing through thought, thanks to looking in this direction, we expand exponentially the possibilities and how we can move forward. Tell me what you ladies are hearing.
I hear a lot of hope, Julie. You know, I really just hear a lot of hope. And just to stress again, you know, this, how the difference is so subtle, but it makes such a huge impact from thinking who you are the thoughts that run through your mind, or thinking who you are, the way that you said it beautifully, that thinking you are the actor, that character, rather than seeing that you are the observer, that you're the audience member, that you're just a conduit, you're a filter for energy, and then create a reality from that. Yeah. That's kind of really beautiful. I just have a lot of hope. Megan.
I agree. It's just, it's amazing to realize that just by stepping back and clearing our mind slightly. And obviously, like, people always think that means meditation or something like that, but it's really just knowing and being aware of what you were just speaking of, about being the audience. And I love the tennis match, actually. Like, I really like the movie, because they always say that you see things as like pictures in your head. So a movie made sense. But the tennis match, about the ball almost being like your thinking going back and forth, you know, that really resonated with me. And I really liked it. And then when you just said, like, just to remember that you are the spectator and you have the option to look before, you know, to look at yourself before the thinking and before the ball was going back and forth, and seeing from there more opportunities present itself when you had a very narrow outlook in the first place. So I really like that. And then I don't know exactly how to word this. It's just my own curiosity, because it's something that I hear often. When it comes to people who consistently, and I don't know if excuses is the right word even, but people who consistently say, like, oh, you know, this came up, or, oh, that came up, or I didn't get it done because of this, or I didn't get it done because of that. They're always like, or I'll do it tomorrow, you know, like procrastinating and excuses. I always say, like, life is a roller coaster and things are always going to happen and come up. So there's no better time like the present. What is your take on that, if any of that made sense to you?
Yeah. So here's what I hear is, you're working with someone and they're committed to a goal. And maybe that goal involves, you know, exercising. And yet when you check in with them, they have a lot of reasons why they actually couldn't get to the exercise.
Right.
Yeah. And it runs counter to what their stated goal is. Their stated, like, big goal, right? Their behavior is running up against what they say they really want. Is that, that's what you're saying, Megan?
Yes, completely. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is why this is kind of a funny one for me to answer. So I used to work in that way where, okay, you want to be more organized. So here are the X, Y, and Z things you've decided you need to do. And one of the things that is really helpful, just boots on the ground practicality for me and for the people that I work with, is that we run everything as an experiment. So if they decide that they have a strategy that they want to pursue and it doesn't work out, it's data. It's additional data collection. It's not a determination on whether or not they're succeeding or failing at their progress in completing this goal. It's just really, I think, more information as to whether or not that strategy is actually good for, is actually the right one for them. Now, this actually points to a really helpful thing that I wanted to bring up that may be also answering your question, Megan. So I said a few different times that strategy and, like, behavior-based change can be helpful. Thinking, meditation, like, thinking-based change can also be helpful. But the source of those helpful strategies are only ever, the best source are only ever going to come from your insight, from your wisdom. And you're going to know that, because you're going to learn the feeling of that. You're going to learn, it's going to occur to you what you need to do. And very, very often what happens is that you start doing something in your life that takes you forward that you would never have thought of, and you don't even realize you're doing anything different until you turn around and you look back and you realize, oh yeah, but that's not a big deal. I just started to do that. This is where true effective transformation comes from. It's, again, not about starting from the outside in. It's so much more often coming from the inside out. That's where your best strategies are going to come from. And even with those, you're going to want to share, you're going to want to put it in the context of experimentation, because that, I think, just it just allows people to not be so hard on themselves.
I have a great example of this, Julie.
Okay, cool.
So I am a singer and I attended a vocal academy. And of course, in the culture of singing or anything that you want to get good at, right? The thing is, you've got to practice. And I remember that I knew I should practice, but I didn't want anyone to hear me. And then, you know, this went on for years, and it would create stress and be like, oh, I'm never going to be a good singer because I'm not practicing. But then I wasn't practicing because I was nervous what other people were saying, blah, 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 blah. And then what I found is the more that I look at what you're saying, the more that I look at the source of my experience, I actually found that, and I didn't realize this, but I've actually found now for the past 12 months, I've been just picking up a guitar and singing no matter who's around, even when people are in the actual same room as me, people that I love and care about. So that is a huge difference in my behavior that literally came from no effort. It came from this natural capacity for just seeing things differently, where it didn't look like a big deal to me anymore, but it wasn't conscious. So I wanted to share.
I love that. That's awesome. I was in Atlanta going to give a talk at a conference, and my taxi cab driver asked me what it was about. And I said, it's change management and this and that. And he goes, oh, well, 5 years ago, I was 100 pounds overweight and I was going to die. And I wasn't going to get to see my grandchild graduate high school. And I was on disability, and I just decided I needed to do something about it. And he lost 100 pounds and he started his own business and he has his own like cab medallion and all this beautiful thing. He had to do a lot of work in order to create all those changes. But it wasn't an effort, right? Because they came from an internal perspective shift. And that's what this is talking about. That is what's available when we look in this direction.
Beautiful, Julie.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. Yeah. I want to just make sure that Megan, that you got your question answered, because it was a really good one.
Yeah, I think I did. My take home from it, between what you guys all just talked about and Amy's story, which I really enjoyed because I knew Amy before when she wasn't comfortable singing in front of people, and now it's like no big deal. And it made me think of how you said, like, just stop caring, you know? And from what I got, and I may be wrong on it, but from what I got from what you just said, is that it's almost like allowing my clients to choose their own experiments so it can come from an internal area for themselves. So instead of me telling them what to do, which I don't always do, I can just get curious and ask them questions and allow them to come up with what they think will be best for them. So it's almost like they're making their own decisions in it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's too much thinking.
No, because what you're doing, Megan, is by asking those questions, is you're helping them get clear on what they really want and what, you know, when we talk stress and we talk change, I find it to be, in my experience, I call it the laughably doable next step. Find that next step, help them find that next step that's so simple and easy for them that it will not cause a hint of overwhelm and stress, right? So you're helping them find that, get in touch with their insight, with their wisdom, with their okayness, and then helping them manage that process of change in a really beautiful way so that it is far more easy to create change, far, far more easy to create sustainable, effective transformation.
Awesome. Thank you. Because I think I totally am very clear on it all now.
Really great questions. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so glad that the three of us could meet for this experiment. So we are running definitely short on time, unfortunately, Julie. So I just want to ask you basically two more questions. One would be, what is the biggest take home that you would want listeners to kind of take with them today, basically? So what's the biggest take home or the biggest point that you want to make? And then please share where people can reach you to find out more information, to have a conversation and possibly work with you or attend a retreat.
Sure. So the biggest take home that comes to mind is that they really do, and I know this is like so cliche and even trite, but I'm going to say it anyway. The answers really are coming and available inside. And it looks so much like they need to come from outside of you. And I would just encourage the listeners to turn back and rest in that place of consciousness that they have, right? That witness, that intelligence, that beautiful force, energy that we're all connected to. When we drop back into that place, we have so much more data and intelligence and insight and wisdom available to us than we realize. And in terms of where people can reach out to me if they'd like to continue the conversation, my website is profound-impact.com. So profound-impact.com. There's videos, tons of blogs, tons of resources. Even if you just want to go and check out and see a little bit more, it's all there.
Awesome, Julie. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And I hope that we can touch base again in the future and have you on again because you rock.
Thanks so much. This is a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. I really enjoyed having Julie Gray on the show today and how she's pointing us in a direction that's foundational, that comes before implementing the strategies and techniques. It's just a wonderful exploration for any individual to embark on. So I do encourage you to explore more in your own life, whatever that looks like for you. And with that, it's time for one of my favorite parts of the show, the section where we share what's called Amy's Real Stories. So Kelly, cue the drum roll, please. Today's Amy's Real Story is as follows. It actually relates very much to what we've been talking about. Here goes. A woman starts her professional singing career at 40-something years old and gets tons of radio play. So this is something that truly defies the status quo. The music industry is rampant with ageism. So I'm going to replay today's real story again so it sinks in. A woman starts, so she begins her professional training. She starts her professional singing career at 40-something years old and goes on to have great success in her home country and gets lots of radio play. So here's a little bit more about this story. The woman's name is Suzanne Bargman, and she is just, wow, what an example for all of us, because not only did she follow her dream of being a singer, but she did it amidst a busy professional career as a consulting psychologist, and she also is a mother of two. So she really shows that it is absolutely possible to overcome lifestyle challenges, and in fact, not just to survive and get by day, but to really live a life of joy and of courageous action. So you can learn more about her story. There's actually two audio clips on this article. There's one where you hear Suzanne's level of singing before she embarked on a year and a half journey of deliberate practice. And then you can also hear her after vocal take. It is phenomenal. So you can go to www.thelatebloomerrevolution.com/never-2-late Amy-Singer. I know that's a lot to maybe write down. That's going to be in our show notes. If you go on iTunes or go to the website, you'll be able to access that and learn more about Suzanne's story. We're actually going to play her song right now. It's called Fall Up. And again, you can find Suzanne's music under her music name, which is Sus B, so S-U-S space B. You can find her online and reach out to her. Her and I are actually in talks that she is going to be a guest on our show in the near future. So you want to stay tuned to Escaping the Rat Race so you don't miss any goodies, any practical inspiration. You can learn more about what we offer here at Escaping the Rat Race by emailing ratrace@amyleo.com to learn about all the opportunities that you'll have to work with us to break through your own lifestyle challenges like lack of time, money, clarity, etc. Again, thank you so much for listening. My name is Amy Leo. Until next time, keep rocking. Like now.